Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back, or good afternoon, good evening, whatever the appropriate phrase of the day is that just gives you that better security, that secure feeling in your gut that says everything's going to be okay. Because I can't give you that. I'm not here to give you that. And as a matter of fact, as I've been saying for years and years, there is no sign, zero, not even a glimpse on the radar in the distance can we find any sign that the federal government is going to unleash any of its unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. Most people are just complaining over the election and voter fraud. Absolutely, this is a huge problem. This may be the ultimate problem that motivates you to finally do something. Yay! I'm glad we're in a situation and a position that forces people to actually do what I've been doing, to actually stand up, do something, get out there, and actually get organized. We're organized with different organizations. There's no time. If you want to create your, you know, Smith Incorporated or your, you know, Dave and Sons or you know, Arlene and Associates, or whatever you want to call your group. If you want to create a group, you're way behind the eight ball. And that's just due to the fact that it takes a long time to get organized and get established. This is why we started actually reaching out to existing organizations, trying to get them to unify. We need you to unify as well. We need you to unify on the Constitution. You have to actually shake loose all these layers of crust of apathy and indifference. And all of the things that you have learned, like I said, it's just layers of crust that's freezing you, keeping you from doing anything, and that you're just more, you know, consumed by gazing at what the heck is going on in the news cycle. Well, it ain't going to change, friends. Even if Trump pulls the rabbit out of the hat, even if the states actually pull forward a lawsuit, it does not get the general government out of doing the things it has no business doing. And I'm telling you, when you walk up to somebody that is holding a sword and saying to them, "I'm sorry, you have no power to hold that sword," what do you think they're going to do? Do you think they're just going to put that sword? Hey, you're right. You proved it to me. And they'll put that sword down. It is uncommon and unheard of historically for any, and when I say any person wielding power, any entity, any organization wielding power, willingly give those things up. You understand? It just doesn't happen. They just don't give those things up. What they do is they come after those who actually say, "Hey, you shouldn't have that." And they go away one way or another. So my point is now is the time, because we actually have what I'll say is we have an opportunity with this imbalance and focus on this one problem to start proving what else, not just the Electoral College, has been stolen. And I don't mean stolen by Biden. I mean it's been stolen by the parties for years. Where is your elector? Who is your elector? You should have voted for that elector. What electors were available on your ballot for you to vote for? Because according to the Constitution, you're voting for electors, not direct electing a president. There's no allowance in the Constitution for a direct election. We're to be, and as a matter of fact, the state legislators are the only control they have is the manner in choosing the electors. They don't have the ability to say, oh, because that's who we're supposed to be choosing. Did you vote for an elector? No. Nobody's voted for an elector in well over a century. So, anyway, we got so many problems, folks. And if you start recognizing what we can do and the capacity that America has in overcoming this evil monster that even though we think, oh, it's such a nice thing, it has been self-serving itself for years and just allowing you a little bit to, you know, kind of, you know, do okay. You're going to get your vacation this year. You're going to be able to watch, you know, go to the World Series. That, you know, you're going to be able to do those little dreams we've allowed you to have. Because that's all there is. You know, that's all they believe they need to do. And they're absolutely right. All they need to do is appease you just enough. Boy, but they want to make sure that they don't tick you off to that point. Well, and now I'm sitting here going, come on, fall over. Let it go. Now's the time to change your stance. Now's the time to actually make our move. Anyway, I could go over the news, and I don't want to go over the news. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. As a matter of fact, in just a week, we've got Bill of Rights Day. Bill of Rights Day is the day that Congress passed the amendments, all 12 of them, to be forwarded to the states for ratification. Out of the 12, the first 10 were amended and or ratified by the states. See, they didn't get just, you know, here, take them all. They were allowed to cherry pick which ones that they wanted to ratify. And the 10 that got ratified is what we call the Bill of Rights. Now, another amendment was ratified regarding a senator's compensation. And I think that was ratified in 1972. I mean. Anyway, nevertheless, the other one is even probably more important. And I think you need to look at Our First Right. Just go to, just Google Our First Right, and this is where they talk about changing and locking down our representative in the House of Representatives that he or she cannot represent any number of citizens greater than 50,000. Currently, you're representing, you're competing with about 750,000, maybe a little more than that, for the attention of your representative. How well does your representative, I mean, what do you have to do to get that kind of attention from a person that is overwhelmed by a million people? The framers, I want you to understand, the framers actually considered 50,000 a very high number. They said, wow, you know, how is a person supposed to be able to represent that? And this is where, and I believe I said this before, that they compared the details and the duty that these guys don't have the authority to mess with much, so they don't need to have that level of representation. I mean, these guys, their primary focus is, you know, declaring war and so forth. Anyway, one of the things we're going to get into is a push on the invasion and so forth, but that's not something that is a part of the getting to the foundation. We have been covering a kind of a macro view of the timeline. This is why we're covering these details of things such as, you know, the cod fishery bounties, and we're going to be going through excuse me, the next set of documents we'll be going through is the 1798 resolutions. Why? Because only that long, 1798, right? How long is that? Well, shoot, the government formed in 1789, the first session of Congress, right? And that's less than, it's about 10 years, not even 10 years, 8-9 years. So my point is that in 1798, in less than a decade, the federal government had already started assuming powers. That's why there's no indication on the radar in the galaxy that this federal government has any indications in releasing any of its power. It may give you a sleight of hand and say, oh, see, that power's not in that hand anymore. Oh, well, yeah, you got 50 million other hands and you just distributed it amongst four over there. Anyway, so this is why we have to be vigilant, and this is why we have to focus at the states. This is why if you want to help Trump, if you want to help people start to understand what is really what our real problems are, start getting out to your state capital and actually start shutting down your media. Yeah, that's right. I'm the guy that is calling for people to go protest the media and the hypocrisy of journalism in America. How these guys are literally using propaganda and false information to get people to believe that the election is done and that it was a fair election and that Joe Biden was actually elected. Are you kidding me? Folks, you got to get mad. You got to start balling up the fists and start punching them in the mouth. And when I say punching them in the mouth, not with your fists, but with your rights. And so your rights, lefts. I'm just kidding. Anyway, we'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
One of the things I do want to say is I want to thank you for tuning in. I know it may be hard sometimes when you might be hearing some things that may not be as coherent when you're hearing things on the upcoming election. Why are you hearing something? Because I don't necessarily have the time, or when you're sick, you just have to kind of play what you can. And I appreciate the fact that we have the content that we can kind of, you know, when we need to just grab something old, we can put it in there, like the cod fishery bounties from last Friday and Monday. I'm going to see the doc. I'm feeling a little better, but I've got a ways to go. One of the things I didn't do yesterday is I didn't get into those hallmark cases, those few cases that that created unconstitutional footings that they started creating the House of Cards with. A friend of mine, Douglas V. Gibbs, wrote, I don't know the name of the book. It was literally, he identifies the few people in American history that had more, that did more damage to our Constitution and our form of government than anybody else. And John Marshall was one of those men. And so I look forward to meeting this man in heaven because, you know, we're sitting here 100, 200 years ago judging him. And there's no doubt that as Washington says, even though it may be the most noble attempt, these are the processes used to destroy governments. And so, I mean, what was Marshall thinking? Was he thinking that he was creating a more secure government, a government that could secure our liberties more? Or was he thinking, well, we needed a government strong enough to secure its liberties as well as its people? No, that was never the intent. Anyway, not necessarily going to poke him in the eye, but I'm going to go say, what the heck? Why? Why did you do these things? And we'll get into these in more detail. But folks, we're in a fight. And I hope you appreciate the fact that this is a final fight. As I talk to it all the time, we are in conflict constantly because the red side or the blue side wants control over very specific things so they can do things. And all the things that they want to do are unconstitutional. They shouldn't be, those shouldn't even be on the table for them to even play with or have any inkling that they want to control those things. Does that make sense? Folks, it's time. It's time that we take back the powers not delegated. It is time we assert our authority over these hooligans. That's all I can say. Anyway, we're in a fight, and we're fighting an enemy that has convinced us that we need to fight in these very specific venues. What am I telling you? The venues where these folks are going that leads to SCOTUS is his venue. What do you do when the compact is being violated? What do you do when the issue at hand is an issue of jurisdiction, when the government, or I should say the court systems that we're being invited into has no jurisdiction? If it is not a delegated power, or if it is a violation of that, then who should be the judge? Madison said it very clearly. Only the parties in the compact can be the judge and jury. And there you go. And we must be the magistrate in establishing, you know, the path forward in getting the federal government back into, I mean, it should not be the states to try to, you know, use this as an advantage to forge a federal government in a different manner than the Constitution allows. I mean, the states have no right in doing that, but they do have a right in demanding that the federal government comply to their delegated powers, staying within them, staying within the spending limits, staying within the powers of being able to create laws. You got to understand that, you know, in so doing, we actually now have the ability as states to thrive. The government, the federal government, was never conceived to constrain us like this. Never. And we've been convinced that it has. So as we fight this enemy, this is, I'm kind of making the, stretching this old little quip into a very long argument for you, because as we fight this enemy, as we go into his halls of justice, and when I say the enemy, he's whomever you want. Satan, the globalists, the lawyers, the people that conceive and perceive the Constitution as their weapon. And they use interpretation, they use everything but those definitions and terms that were provided in defining that Constitution. They use everything but those. So, when we go in and we fight them, we are surrendering our sovereignty. We don't need to do this anymore, folks. We can take a stand and we can actually demand that they comply. But I just want you to understand, however you want to label this enemy that you're recognizing now, I call him Satan, because Satan is the deceiver that gets us to believe, oh, I'm just this, I'm just that, I'm not that bad guy. My favorite adage is, the only lie Satan needs you to believe for him to be successful is that he doesn't exist. Anyway, regardless of the enemy, whoever you perceive that to be, we cannot allow these battles to continue in his court, in his dominion, where he acts, because we're surrendering our sovereignty every time we do. So when it comes down to a violation of the compact, the parties have the right to determine. No, it's not the court. Nope, it is the states. And so I just want you to be very, very clear. This is why Republic Review is so important. And this is why the parties must form together. They must, any state that has a petition for a constitutional amendment convention, a Article 5 convention, any state that has that petition, they need to rip it up. They need to say, you know what, we don't need to change the Constitution. We're going to enforce this. And if you join in Republic Review, it will be a part of that process, that by joining Republic Review, you are seeking enforcement of the Constitution and not an amendment. We're hoping to have a piece of legislation that we can start throwing across several states this year. And in so doing, we hope to actually get these things planted so that as states start passing them, it will guide and direct them to begin working together in auditing and defining these violations. And so I feel really good about where we're at, and that's because things are falling apart at the seams, and that's because the conservatives are realizing that it may be over, because if you understand the course that we're taking in trying to fight this election, well, I'm sorry to say, my friends, the court system is not the place for it. This is where a smart political lawyer who believes and loves liberty will be the first to say, we have no business in court. We must convene our own court as states. We must coalesce, we must come together, and we must be the judges and juries to determine what, why, and how we're going to get compliance to our Constitution. So, isn't that fun? Too much detail, right? I get it. Okay, so one of the things I did promise, I want to get into the planners sometime between now and the ratification debates. But in going through this timeline, we've got a lot of stuff to cover. And so we will be going into the resolutions. But one of the things I didn't really get into, and I must say this right now before I lose another segment, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions of what we have to do. And so getting back into this hindsight being 2020 and why Madison never said anything and what he did say, he was very consistent. He was constantly holding the line that we did have a defined government. We had enumerated powers. There were no general powers granted. And as president, he even proved that in vetoing. It's not up to the discretion of a personality's interpretation. This is why I believe our very first presidents, some better than others, but Madison being the best in vetoing very specific bills and very specific legislation that would have created problems, and his veto statements were spot on. When we come back, we're going to go through some of these, some of my readings of why Madison never said what he said. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so Madison did believe in a right of conscience. Now, when it came down to official things, he was a formidable warrior in words in supporting liberty and the founding principles of the Constitution and sovereignty. And so when we find debates and you find in Congress, in the annals of Congress, and what's the annals of Congress? I believe if you look, it started off with the annals of Congress, or that was the first sealed or completed set of records that Congress made. And so if you go to loc.gov, the Library of Congress.gov, you'll actually be able to get copies of exactly what these guys said. But they took notes. They actually wrote it down. And so this is why I actually go in. This is why I went in and pulled out the 263 pages of the congressional debates of the 14th Amendment. So, moving forward, the annals of Congress are the very first few years of how they were recording Congress. Then they went to the Congressional Globe, And that's how they started recording the records of Congress back and forth. And each day is covered there. They'll cover either the Senate first and the House, or the House and the Senate and so forth. You'll also find that in the final stage, I believe it's the records of Congress. Now, that's what they call them. And so whenever they want to discuss something, they like I said, they do write it down. And if you want to know what was being said over a very particular issue, why go to the newspaper? Go to the Annals of Congress, the Congressional Globe, or the Congressional Record. This is why I will tell you, if you look at the 17th Amendment, just the 17th Amendment, and the records of Congress, and how they debated the impact of that amendment, the men that were arguing at the time were idiots. They were clueless. Those who were supporting this had no understanding that in Article 5, there was an amendment protection clause keeping an amendment such as the 17th Amendment from being ratified. And yet we have a 17th Amendment. What they ended up doing was they actually created a conflict. Now, this might be where the Supreme Court would go, you know what, that is a conflict. We've got to get rid of it. But no, because it supports the agenda of taking away state sovereignty and state controls over the House of the Senate. Well, then, okay. We're just going to have to let this thing go. So anyway, back to this hindsight being 2020. I know that Madison, a lot of times he was asked about this decision, that decision, and so forth. And so when it came down to Marshall's decisions on very specific cases, and I'm going to read you these cases right now. Marbury v. Madison, this is one that actually Madison had a hand in, 1803. Fletcher v. Peck, 1810. Sturgis v. Crown and Shield, 1819. Now, this one was after Madison. Dartmouth College versus Woodward, 1819. McCullough v. Maryland, 1819. Cohen's v. Virginia, 1821, and Gibbons v. Ogden, 1824. These seven cases were landmark cases. Why? Because the rulings were correct. However, in each of these cases, Marshall went beyond and actually lied and obfuscated and made assertions based on opinion, not on fact. And what ended up happening as the Lawyer Guild started moving America towards case law and precedents within the Constitution, and I defy you, you find me anything that says case law and precedents will be allowed to be used in issues regarding the Constitution. Because the reason why they weren't going to allow that is because that is the way, that's the mechanism in forcing change. Well, they knew that the only way anything could change within the Constitution required state authority, not the court's authority. Courts were only determined whether this was in the Constitution or not. They're supposed to make a ruling. And so Madison never said a word regarding any of these rulings because he knew there was no way that the opinions and the babblings of Marshall would ever become law. They had no authority to become law. Had Madison known and foresaw that several decades down the road, these babblings that Marshall had made would become the unconstitutional footings to create a facade of government, such as the Directory of Home or Directory of Interior, Madison would have instantly said, hey, that, you know what? It's one thing that they actually have these opinions, but those opinions need to be encapsulated, put to the side, and say, these have no legal standing. because they don't. Only the ruling has legal standing. Opinions are just words. As a matter of fact, somebody could actually write in their opinion, men are pigs. Well, that's not legal fact. I mean, most men may be legally fact that they're pigs, but anyway, you see my point. These are opinions. They have no standing. And so what ended up happening was these cases actually, in Marshall's opinions, allowed the necessary and proper clause, the commerce clause, the general welfare, general defense and welfare clause, and the supremacy clause to aggrandize itself to where they were then being used decades later as portals for the government to assume new power. Because as Marshall argued in Cohen v. Virginia, that the federal government could do whatever's necessary for the betterment. I mean, they have that authority in the necessary and proper clause. That's how they started leaping forward and going outside those boundaries. It was a very long process of scaling these very sheer walls of parchment. There's not a lot of cracks in these things. So it took time, and they understood that with common law and with common law rulings and those types of things, that, you know, things could be swayed one way or another. And that was Hamilton's design. But the problem is that those things, not the common law, isn't within the Constitution. It is not dictated. Only the common law courts and common law be recognized, but it is not to be applied as a part of the Constitution. In other words, if it is in the Constitution, it is in the Constitution. You can't have a court, like in common law, dictate what is to become constitutional. The court, or I should say, the Constitution is very clear. The only mechanism that allows anything to become constitutional is the Article 5 process. Said and done. That's it, folks. That's all we have. Thank you for playing. Now let's move on. Now, so let me see. I've got basically less than 2 minutes. And then we go into our final segment. So what I'll do is I want to spend a little bit of time in going through kind of what happened from the cod fishery boundaries. Because I want to be really clear. You know, as Madison was seeing all this stuff unravel, you know, and he heard the ruling, okay, well, you know, he wasn't happy with the Madison v. Murbury, or Murbury v. Madison. I'm sorry, Marbury v. Madison. He wasn't happy with that. That was an overreach. And so what was the verdict? They didn't have any jurisdiction. But what ended up happening was it created an overreach by the court and allowed the court to become an active agent instead of a passive agent. And so why is it that they never did anything? Why is it that they never really focused on, you know, kind of going after that? Well, shoot, they had the Indian Wars. They had the French and the British out there instigating with the Indians. They had the Spaniards to the south. They had all sorts of problems at sea. We couldn't get through the Barbary coasts because the Ottoman Empire was harassing, stealing, and waging economic warfare throughout the Mediterranean. So with that, they had a lot on their plate, and they were just trying to figure out how to get through some of these things. Anyway, so what we ended up doing is we ended up just really focusing more on basic trade standards. How are we going to create trade standards between these separate states? And they wanted to be as neutral and free as possible so that our goods could compete on a free market instead of these all these levies because of the mercantile system and the other games that these, you know, like the Ottoman Empire was playing. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so, you know, as you look at all of the strategies, because there's a lot of different strategies that we had to take, and the first strategy with Washington was that we needed to be very neutral, that we couldn't create alliances. And he warned us of alliances because of entanglements and so forth. And so the reason Washington had to have that kind of policy is because we had really no force to project. We couldn't really defend ourselves, and we weren't looking to fight another war. We were doing everything we could to regroup, to try to, you know, get out of debt and those types of things. I mean, we had real issues at the time, friends. It wasn't like, you know, all of a sudden the spigot of blessings were opened and, you know, we were building aircraft carriers and ICBMs. No. We had a long way to go. And as a matter of fact, Britain was very clear that they were going to continue to harass us. They weren't going to honor the agreements because they were still upset with the fact that, you know, we were just, you know, some snot-nosed colonies that broke away from them. And it became pretty clear that Britain was, that the war really wasn't over. They were impressing our sailors. They were taking our ships and so forth. And this is why there was a real strategic effort in building the Navy as well as a Coast Guard. And it was one of Jefferson's ideas of creating small little battleships that could kind of negotiate through the rough shores and so forth in fighting the larger ships. But it was Adams who was truly the ardent supporter of a big Navy. And Jefferson was critical of this. And so as they were moving forward, they were kind of fighting and posturing, which was the best posturing. The other thing that was also going on was how do we start paying for things? I mentioned the horse tax and how that was already argued that it was unconstitutional and it would have been ununiform, that it would have been more oppressive on the agrarian states than it would have on the manufacturing states. They were actually watching the French Revolution unravel before their very eyes. Friends who they created bonds with were being thrown in prison and even killed. This was horrifying. And how France and the divide in America between the Francophiles and the Anglophiles, the Francophiles were those who loved and supported the French. The Anglophiles were those who loved and supported the British. Well, you can see why they're, you know, everybody, each of those probably should have been hated, but the French were our allies. The French were critical in helping us defeat the Britain. And what we saw going on, and that's why I'm really bad with names, so I'm not even going to try to remember some of these guys that they had bonds with, they brought back to America, or they helped get out of prison so that they could survive and not be beheaded. If you look at all of the things that were going on at the time, and you look at the technology, it's not like they had the ability to just, you know, push a button and, you know, have a conversation with a head of state. It took months. It literally took, at best, in the good weather seasons, it took probably 2 months to communicate with Britain. You know, to write something, to get it on ship, and for it to go over to Britain, because the amount of time it took for it to actually float over there, to get handed to the person it was intended to, and then that person looking at the correspondence and going, huh, okay, and then figuring out and writing their correspondence and then sending it back, unless it was being hand-delivered, and that was really where the critical communications were being done, that was maybe a month and a half. Maybe. Most people, it took months. It took months to be able to find out how your husband or wife is doing, or the family that you just lost. I mean, when you receive news that somebody had already died months ago, I mean, it's like, that's how tragic things were. Another paradigm I'll give you is, in those days, it was so common for children, babies, to die at a very young age. Crib death and what have you. Infantile mortality was probably one of its worst cases at that point in time. And so in America, they didn't name the children until after age 2, practically. And it was a common practice to just refer to the new baby as the visitor. They didn't want to be too bonded to that. I mean, how do you not, mothers out there, how do you not bond with that baby, even if you're just calling it the visitor, as you suckle it and you nourish it and you take care of it, you know, and see to its needs and, you know, stop its crying and so forth. I mean, those were tough times, but still, that was the paradigm. They lived in a different world than we today. And, you know, we hear these old crows like me talking about, you know, we didn't need resource officers. We had paddles in schools. There is truth to that. I want you to understand that when you start mollycoddling and mollycoddling, it becomes an endless cycle. So as they were leaving the cod fishery bounties debates, and as they were going through the French Revolution and the taxation and getting revenue coming into the government from the whiskey, you know, the whiskey tax as well as the rebellion and these other things, I just want you to understand that they were getting a lot of little things done. And by the time Washington stepped down, there was, in America, the first real political divide between the anti-federalist and the federalist. And the federalists were showing their head with Adams and Adams made some huge mistakes. And the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions were the epitome of that. What was leading into this was all sorts of rhetoric and all, I mean, hey, America, you had a right of free speech. You could threaten people with their lives. You could call people baby murderers. As a matter of fact, the Thomas Jefferson, John Adams election campaign, you will find that some of that rancor, some of the comments and the barbs thrown at each other were some of the most severe ever. I mean, it was probably the most hostile election in American history. And I am here to tell you that, you know, as Adams was going through his presidency, he saw how he was losing public opinion. So what did he do? Well, Congress passed these laws called the Virginia, or not the Virginia, Kentucky. Those are the resolutions against that. Congress passed four laws. They passed the laws of the Alien and Sedition Acts. And without going into all of the details, you know, they all had these little things to basically state that if you are speaking out against our government, then you are an enemy of our government and your speech is violating the law, because they were actually making laws that were abridging the First Amendment. They were actually protecting government itself instead of protecting the Constitution. And they tried to make the gesture, they were trying to purport, trying to presume that the government and the Constitution are synonymous. No, no, no. And as a matter of fact, people started realizing this. And fortunately, at this point in time, it hadn't been that long since the Revolution. You want to understand why we are so apathetic and we are so, you know, divided and we're so lost, is because we haven't gone through these things, and because we haven't at least been taught these things, then we have no idea. We can't even see how these things are even related or how these things affect each other. Friends, I will tell you that the first real assault on the Constitution, and I mean a true assault, the Assumption Act was a violation. There were other violations prior to this, but this was the first assault in trying to change the paradigm of our government. Not just trying to, you know, imply some power or aggrandizing an implied power that wasn't there. The fact of the matter is with the Alien and Sedition Acts, they were changing paradigm that you could now no longer speak out. That was seditious. You couldn't speak out against the government, or you couldn't speak out against the president. And so what was happening, because now in 1798, when these laws were being passed and then finally signed, well, shoot, this is 2 years after the election, and there has already been a divide. And at that point in time, I don't know if Jefferson served the full 4 years. I believe he did. I do not believe he was removed. But he had to walk a very tight line to not being, you know, identified and kicked out for treason or what have you. I am G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. And we're getting into these resolutions in our next few episodes. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.